Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.
Serving spiritual seekers around the world. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, this is your host, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. And it's been a while since I've said those words because my wife and I, Wendy, have been on a 10-week sabbatical in Scotland and British Columbia and Maine. And finally, we're back here in good old Fort Worth, Texas. And today I welcome back to the show internationally recognized shamanic healer and teacher Itzhak Beery. He was initiated into the circle of 24 Yachaks by his Quechua teacher in Ecuador and into the healing tradition of his Amazonian Kanamari Page teacher. He's the founder of shamanportal.org. and co-founder of the New York Shamanic Circle. And he's also on the faculty of the New York Open Center and the Kripalu Institute. And his new book, which systematically outlines traditional medicine for a modern world, is entitled Shamanic Healing and is the subject of today's show. So it's a joy to welcome Itzhak Beery back to the World Spirituality. So welcome. Glad you're with us.
I'm so happy to be with you again, Paul, and with all your listeners.
You know, this book really kind of systematizes it, doesn't it? Unlike some of your other books were equally fascinating, you've actually made sort of a primer for anybody that doesn't know anything about shamanistic practices and healings. You've sort of laid it out very elegantly in four main parts. First of all, your journey and how you found this way, this approach, and then a nice chapter on what is it exactly, what is shamanic healing, and then you go into quite some detail teaching us about the various techniques and ceremonies and teachings that are commonly associated with shamanic healing. And then finally, in the last part of the book, very fascinating section, healing stories of people who've overcome a variety of things, from physical ailments to depression and anxiety, even possession and cancer. And that's fascinating, too, because it shows that, you know, this is just not an intellectual exercise. It's a very potent, practical thing we can do. In the introduction, you say you're about uniting shamanic healing and Western medicine. And so often people who are into alternative medicine or shamanic healing say, you know, oh, allopathic medicine, I don't like it. It's not going to the root. It doesn't go to the cause of the problem. It's dealing with symptoms, etc. Like you say in the book, it's dealing with the smoke and not directly going to the fire. But you don't see it like that, right? You see that they can be complementary. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, because my very good friend, personal friend for many years, had he was a healer and a fantastic healer. And when he had cancer on his tongue, he decided that he's going to heal it himself. And he struggled with that, and he didn't want, he was so stubborn, he didn't really want to have any kind of help with from Western medicine. And even though I tried to drag him into hospital to see doctors so he can be saved, he refused, and he finally died. And I understand maybe why he did it, but I don't think that this is the right approach, because this medicine or technology that we have today is incredibly useful. And it's true that it doesn't really heal the source or the roots of problems, but it definitely can save life. So why not to use that? And so I think that on both hands, there are some people who are would not use any kind of allopathic medicine, and some people who would not use any kind of Western medicine. And I, this book is really about the need to embrace both systems, because both systems are the full experience of the human human life in this in our life, and why not to use what works? And shamanic healing is really about what works.
Right, exactly. And you mentioned, of course, that shamanic healing deals with the whole person, right? It's a holistic approach as opposed to just dealing with symptoms or parts of the body, but to see everything in relation to everything else. Because if we look around us, we'll see that everything is flowing, right? Everything is part of this great whole. We are part of nature, although often we don't see ourselves in that regard. We see ourselves as sort of cut off from nature, and I think that could be dangerous to our health, can't it, when we feel like we're divided from the origin of who we are in truth. And part of shamanic healing is coming back to that connectedness.
Exactly. And, you know, when we say we are talking about mostly about the Western world, about the North America and European experience. Where the idea of a man separated from nature, controlled nature, was so influential in the Industrial Revolution. But it was definitely not a practical approach, because we are not separated, and we really understand now with everything that goes all around us that we are not separated from the wind, from the fire, from the earthquakes, from all of those. We are part of it. We are one element in the whole of nature. And the more we feel connected to that, the more we are part of, the more healthy and balanced our lives are. A lot of our illnesses that you read in this book, and mostly depression and schizophrenia and other things like that, there are the roots of that really come from desperation of loneliness. And loneliness is, I think, that is the biggest disease that we have in our society. People who are lonely, they are seeking some kind of connection, and they sometimes create it in a totally wrong way.
Right. You know, I remember when I was a kid reading Shakespeare or Greek myths, and it talked about when there was chaos in society, it was reflected in nature, so there'd be storms and whatnot. And I remember thinking, oh, that's a nice idea, but it's very fanciful. Surely that can't be true. But, you know, now as I understand the interconnectedness of everything, you know, I understand, of course it's true, you know, when there's some kind of imbalance in anything, because we are one system, we are Gaia or whatever, And so, you know, the storms we're experiencing right now, and they seem to have increased in size and frequency over the last 30 years. You know, you've got to say it's got to be something that, you know, humankind are doing, right? We could deny global warming so the cows come home, but something's going on. Something's out of balance. So, you know, and again, I think, you know, it's, you're talking about loneliness in a microcosmic way, but there's also a cosmic loneliness, that we are existentially cut off from this larger vision. and it leads to an imbalance. You can't keep, like you call it, homo economicus. You know, you can't go on keeping, spending and accumulating. Right? There's got to be a higher purpose than that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you. I spent some time in indigenous societies in the Amazon and in the Andes, and I can see how their life relates to nature, how they each of them relate to the plants and the food that they grow, how do they relate to the weather. They are part of it. They are not separate from it like we do. We're really so busy about protecting ourselves from feeling bad, feeling hot, feeling cold, feeling insecure. We're building more and more citadel instead of opening ourselves to nature. And you know what? We think that this call about connectedness is a spiritual call. But, you know, if you look at the scientific data now about quantum physics and quantum mechanics, we understand that every action that we take on this earth has effect other people and the environment with the matrix that we are creating. So it's not a fanciful spiritual voodoo. It is a scientific fact that when you create something, you influence others everywhere else in this world. The idea is that you can manipulate, obstruct, overuse the resources, and that would not influence the quality of life on this earth or the balance on earth. It is totally. Fanciful illusion by corporations, or you want to call it that, they are busy collecting money or making money on our behalf.
You know, I was on the island of Rona in Scotland, and there's no one else on it now except the custodian, and so we were on there for a week pretty much on our own. Back in the day, 100 years or so ago, there was a thriving community. They all left, and the ruins are still there. But one of the people wrote a little memoir of their time, and people would often say to her, "Oh my God, it must have been awful. They're cut off from everything on the island, and it was such a hard life." And you know, it was quite hard compared to the luxury that we live in today. But she said, "I didn't feel like that at all. I felt totally free. There was no clocks. There was no need for us to, to follow certain strictures. We didn't eat that brilliantly, but we were free to do whatever we wanted to do. And that we were always fit and well because we were walking everywhere. And it was a life of joy and fascination for her." And I thought, how different, it's a different perspective, isn't it, on life, that when we're cuddled up in our little safe rooms, hidden from everything else, we feel like, oh my goodness, to live that kind of life would be awful. But in fact, it's the opposite. She felt very connected to everything. I'm reminding also, it's like that, when the tsunami was coming across the Indian Ocean several years ago, the Andaman Island people, who were fairly, quote, primitive, they actually knew when it was coming way before it came, and they were able to seek higher ground, whereas more, quote, civilized people were not aware of it until it was upon themselves. So this tells you something, doesn't it? They were attuned, in other words, to the system, to the whole, and so they could know when something was changed in their environment even before, instruments could measure it, which is quite fascinating.
Yes, and I think that's the power of this movement that we are now creating in the last 40 years or so, where people are understanding instinctively that this is the case, and they are gravitating toward more shamanic way of life or a perspective of life, because we understand that the system that we created is not working. And it is created as a in many ways a nightmare, not as a dream of society. And we have to change that. We have to go back to the connection that we have with nature. And it's not just a spiritual thing. I believe that it's essential for our own survival. You know, I think about my grandchildren, what kind of world that I leave behind. I'm a little shocked, and I'm very depressed over that. Unless we're going to change, maybe there'll be a tipping point that the industrial world will understand that there is no way to continue to develop in that way. That in if we are talking about the Western medicine is in the same way. The answer is not only technology. The answer is also looking at people as people, helping them in their emotional, social, cultural way too to come when they go into treatment. Because when people are connected to nature, any kind of treatment works better. And I think if you apply that to any other practices in our life, that's hold true. We cannot continue to grab the resources of the earth and be so greedy and don't care about other people or the environment and expect to live a long life, or the children will grow to be healthy.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, for those of us who do have, you know, children or grandchildren, you know, it's even more important, isn't it? We feel like, well, I got to do something here. I can't leave the earth in a worse state than it was that when I found it. You know, there's that sense that I want to do something for the ones that come after me. And, you know, I know that, you know, 200 years ago, you know, when the railways came and the canals or whatever, the people thought, oh my God, they're ruining the environment. Now we could consider, you know, old railroads or canals in the countryside quaint or whatever. And for our generation, you know, I remember going to visit Stonehenge and you could walk right up to it. Now there's fences all around it. And so things are constantly changing and we're changing our worldview. But it can also change the other way, I think. I know in Britain, for instance, there's a big movement to rewild the countryside, to bring back species. And I know we've tried that here in the States also. But it's a sense that it doesn't always, the trajectory doesn't always have to be going in one direction. It can shift, right? I think the national parks, for instance, are a wonderful resource that we have. You know, they were created by thoughtful people 100 years or so ago, you know, to create a resource for us that are essential to, you know, lungs of sanity in an often insane world.
Well, that's what we are working for. You know, that's what this interview is about. That's what the books are about. It's about,
yes,
tipping the point, making people realize that we can go on abusing Mother Earth, you want to call it, or our resources, and we can't think that we are invisible, that we do leave footprints on this earth no matter what we do, the choices we make, the doctor we see, the food we eat, the fast food we eat, the clothing we wear, all of that have living footprints on this earth, and that really make changes all over. So we have to be very careful and very picky about what we do and how we do it, and choose correctly.
Right, absolutely. So tell us a little bit about how you came into this way of thinking. I think it was in the mid-90s, wasn't it, when you met your first teacher? So just give us an overview, because you have a wonderful chapter going into detail on the various things that happened to you. But give us a little taste of it.
Well, you know, I was born in Israel in a kibbutz, which is a totally non-religious atheist community, a communist, and we always celebrated the nature and nature holidays. We never celebrated as a religious holiday. And we also never put any kind of spiritual aspect to it. We celebrated like farmers, which was beautiful, I think. And then I was an artist, and I migrated here to New York to study art. And then I became, I had a small advertising agency, and which grew, and we became a little boutique advertising in New York City. I won awards, and I had family with children. So at the age of close to 40, I started to feel that something is utterly wrong. That's not enough. There must be something more to that, to life. And we commonly call that a midlife crisis, where we start to ask the big questions. And for a few years, I was totally in the dark or in the fog, and until I read a book by Hank Wesselman, Spirit Walker, which gave me a very tantalizing answers to my life. And I read about a workshop he described by a guy named Michael Horner. And when I came back to New York from my trip to Hawaii, I participated in this workshop, and I realized that I have power that I never imagined that I have. And I believe that everybody has the same power, the powers to see into the other world. And that really fascinated me. And I could not understand how that happened. How can... while somebody drum and you envision going into power animals and this upper world, lower world, and middle world, you see things that you normally can't see or bring information for people that are so valuable to them. So I got really excited about that, and I decided to participate in another workshop by John Perkins, who was also leading trips to Ecuador and to the Amazon. And I decided to, after his workshop, to go to the Amazon and to the Andes. And in the Andes, I met a shaman or yachak named Jose Joaquin Pineda, who 2 years later became my teacher, I became his apprentice. I participated in some plant medicine, ayahuasca, in the Amazon, which was very life-changing experience for me, which I still trying to fulfill that visions of what I gave to the plants of the Amazon there. And so when I came back from my trip to the Amazon, I founded the New York Shamanics. I co-founded the New York Shamanic with a group of people. And then I founded the New York, the Shaman Portal, the website that is a global resource for all shamanic work around the world, because I felt that shamans work individually, but they don't reach people. And of course, I used my advertising skills to help bring the people who are interested in shamanism and the teachers to bring them together. So they have one platform where they can advertise and teach and learn, and they can reach their audience. And there is news there. There are different books and movies. And so it's a whole educational hub for the shamanic community. And then I started to do healing work and started to teach around in the United States and mostly in Europe and Israel. And now I teach, continue to teach all around the world, to do healing work, and organizing different trips to the Amazon and the Andes and Summit and other things like that. So it started totally by coincidence. It's not something that I actually planned to do, and I encourage the people who are listening to see if they have that inside them to bring it into their community and help other people. Because the shamans that I worked with throughout the years, they all believe that we are all shamans, that we all have the ability to heal other people by listening to them, by hugging them, by giving them a good advice, by giving them something to drink or to dream. To have visions that can help them in their life. So that's really my life work, is to help people to reconnect to their shaman inside and to demystify that it's only other people can do. I truly believe that that once you realize that you have a healing power within you, that you can actually affect the outcome of life of other people, you treat your life in more sacred way and your community in more sacred way. And that's yes. That's a usually it's a huge departure from thinking that I am the only one. I can, you know, I'm invisible, or I can do whatever I want. It is taking responsibility for your family, community, and the world.
We have an interesting dichotomy, don't we? Most of us, we're on one hand, we have this inordinate self regard. You know, our egos kind of out of control, and yet also we have a terrible vulnerability, which is the obverse side of the ego, and we feel we need, you know, somebody to tell us what to do. So we go after, you know, experts, and we listen to talking heads, or even if we're on the spiritual path, you know, it's the latest workshop or the new teacher or whatever, instead of relying on our own abilities. And of course, it's not the ego's ability, is it? It's the whole of us, which is that mysterious presence that's in everything. I got to just do a personal example here. Coming back after 10 weeks, you know, on sabbatical was a little tough. And it was the shift back into my work as a minister. And I felt a little anxious yesterday morning before I went for my first day back. And my wife gave me this big, big hug and just held me. We were kind of a little tearful, actually, for some reason, and sent me on my way. But I felt like she was a healer for me right there. You know, that she was the giving me energy and power, and it didn't have to speak about it. It was just given beautifully. And I think this is exactly what we're talking about. You know, she was acting as a shamanic healer for me at that moment, and I couldn't have, you know, if I wasn't receptive to it, I probably wouldn't have received anything, right? But because I was receptive, you know, I felt great healing power, and I think this is part of it, isn't it? We have to, it's all around us, but until we are attuned to it, we don't see it.
That's right. You know, like that's what I write in the book, because I think that we think that we need to be something like a magician to do shamanic work. But you know that when you hug someone over 20 seconds only, you're releasing love hormones. You're releasing in the person that you hug, and in yourself too, the feeling of safety, security, calmness. And new hormones are released into the brain, which is a fantastic medicine. You don't need to take hormones. You don't need to take Prozac. You only need somebody to hug you. But what happens if you don't have someone to hug you, or to be hugged? You know, what that's the problem with being alone. There are so many people who are not touched. There are so many people who live alone and they don't have anyone to talk to.
Right.
That's really the sickness of our society, is that we don't take care of the people in our society, that we think that we just leave them behind.
Absolutely. And it's tough, though, for some of us, isn't it, to reach out, to feel connected. You know, you can see why people do become fragmented and alone, because our society can do that to us. There's a lot of lonely people. In Unity, for instance, you know, as a movement, we tend to hug a lot, and I think we do that. You know, part of it is purposefully, because we know that it is healing, and we want to acknowledge our unity with each other. The thing about it is, you can't force it on someone, right? There's a time and a place for everything. And you can't be a Nazi about hugging. You know, I know some people like to hug people whether they want to be hugged or not. So we have to be sensitive, I think, to you know, are people open and receptive to receiving that? So, again, it's all about attuning ourselves, you know, to what's appropriate at any given time.
Well, you know, I don't believe that people don't like to be hugged. I think it's a condition.
All right.
I think that when children are not hugged, when children don't feel safe, they're growing up learning to shield themselves from any kind of human touch. I think our work as a healer is to hug. And, you know, I do a lot of hugging because I believe in the love hormones. Right. And of course, you have to ask for permission when you do that. And I do ask for permission to hug people after every healing session. And some people feel very strange about it. And I had a British woman from the upper class. I did a healing for her in Firenze, and she was saying to me, "Why should I hug you? I don't hug strange people." I said to her, "But right now we spend an hour and a half talking about the most intimate parts of your life."
Mm-hmm.
And I said to her, "Fine, you know, it's okay." But the next time she came, she says, "Can I have a hug?" And I said to her, "I don't hug strange people." And she was she was laughing because she realized how crazy it is that to protect yourself from hug, from opening to your heart.
Right, exactly. Folks, I'm with Itzhak Beery. We're talking about his new book, Shamanic Healing, and talking about the power of connectedness and the fact that we can all do this. It's not just for special people who happen to have shamanic powers. We all intrinsically have those powers and energies within us. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll look at some of the techniques of shamanic healing. What is it exactly? But now listen to these messages from Unity and join us very shortly.
If Unity Online Radio has helped you grow spiritually through programs like this one, please consider supporting this online radio programming. Visit www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now. Thank you for helping us continue to serve as the voice of an awakening world.
Weather forecasters can provide guesstimates based on scientific data, but in the end, we cannot know with absolute certainty what the weather will be until we live it. Life works the same way. We may think we know what's going to happen, expecting the best while preparing for the worst. We can keep a positive frame of mind and weather any storm because we are one with the ever-present miracle-working power of God. We are mightier than any circumstance on this earth because we are divine in nature and a part of the eternal. We live in a world where we can realize our possibilities because we know that with God, all things are possible. And the way to keep our hearts and minds centered and focused on divine potentialities is through prayer. As author Frances W. Foulkes wrote in her book, Effectual Prayer, "If the time of achievement seems long, pray. If the way seems dark, pray. If the results seem delayed, pray. Morning, noon, and night, pray. Pray without ceasing."
This Mindful Moment is brought to you by Daily Word Magazine. For more than 90 years, Daily Word has helped people of all faiths live healthy, prosperous, and meaningful lives. Take advantage of our 30-day free trial of the digital edition. You'll receive access to the online magazine, a daily email with the word for the day, and the Daily Word app. To sign up for the 30-day free trial, visit unityonlineradio.org/dailyword.
I will leave this world as it is.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours, and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find my God.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Jack Beery, and we're talking about his new book, Shamanic Healing. And we've been having a fascinating discussion about aspects of this wonderful way of reaching connectedness with the larger sense of self that we are, the self with a capital S, if you like. But I want to put you right on the line right now, and in a few words, tell me, what for those that have no clue whatsoever, what is shamanic healing? I know it's the chapter 2 in your book, but can you sum it up for us? What is it?
Well, I was debating how to put it all together because, you know, it's very difficult first of all, to say what healing is, and second, what is shamanic?
Yes.
I mean, if you look the definition of shamanic, there is thousands of different way of trying to explain, and if you look at the healing, it's the same way. So the way I end up categorizing what shamanic is it's the collective healing experience of humans since the time a man walked on this earth, using the elements in his or her environment and the spirit world together. Now, that means that it is the usage of plants and minerals and waters and herbs and everything that you find around you to heal a person. And I think that it's one way to look at it is it's a low cost and high impact healing. And the way I look at healing is not necessarily curing, but it's a way or a system that find out the roots of and causes of a person's feelings and physical manifestation of problems, to eliminate them and to heal or to bring the person into balance, or another way you call it is to bring a person into flow, because when a person is in a flow, there is no disease, there is no something that stops the flow of energy. So if you look at it that way, it is so the shamanic healing is a system that helps to bring balance and flow of energy into a person's body, spirit, and mental, emotional, mental, and spirit, and physical, not just for the person, but for the community and for the world at large.
So you have quite a bit of, you talk about possession and evil forces, you know, and for us in Unity, we say there is no devil as such. We don't say there is no evil. Obviously, evil is apparent, but it's not. There's no force of evil. It's more, you know, we take the good and we twist it out of shape, if you like. Just as that unfortunate perpetrator of the terrorist act in Las Vegas did. If you're listening to this show live, you'll know that just happened yesterday, where it took the life of almost 60 people and 500 were or more were injured. again, an act of pure evil, as our president called it. But you know, obviously, in some sense, he was possessed by something. He was certainly in a sense of imbalance and separated from his fellow brothers and sisters on this planet to do something like that. So when we say possession, what do you mean by that?
Well, in some cultures in the world, there is a belief that there are negative energies in the world or evil spirit in the world that are looking to be done there, to be doing their work through people who are injured, which people who are possess fear, insecurities, and greed. All of that is come from fear. So those people, and I wrote about this article about actually about Trump himself, because Trump is, from all purposes, shamanically, he's possessed with evil spirit. And the difference between evil spirit and or the God's work or devil work is that the evil spirit are doing all they can to stop the flow of life and bring death. Good God work is to continue the flow of life, the joy of life. So there is a two different intentions in those things. And in the Kabbalah, they always talk about that dance between the good and evil is an everlasting dance from the very beginning between the two opposites, the forces of life and the forces of death. And if you believe in duality, that's part of it. And so you can't have life without those two forces, two opposite forces. And it's like the yin and yang. It's the black and white. It's the life and death. And it's the men and female and masculine. It's everywhere. I mean, anything that in our world is always that the struggle between the two forces, the two sides of ourselves. In some traditions, in the Jewish tradition, that which I don't know much about, but the work of the spiritual people is to recognize the evil part in themselves and choose with intention to do good in the world, and that's really where we are. It's not like we don't have dark shadows in ourselves, but people who are in a good way need to find way to work through that shadows and fears and greed that they have in themselves and not afflict that on other people. And in that way, Trump himself is possessed with evil spirit because a lot of his action have the same kind of symptoms that what we call possession. And the person that you're talking about that did these things in Las Vegas, in many ways, was possessed by an unexplained force to create evil and to create death or stop people's life from being happening.
And so, you know, what I'm hearing you say is that it's not demonizing these parts of ourselves. It's integrating them. You know, it's the dark side, the shadow side, as Jung put it, you know, that is integrally in connected to who we are, right? We don't want to stamp out our ego. We want to have ego in a healthy manner that can serve the larger whole. So it's not a question of, and I think that's sometimes the way it's interpreted in traditional Christianity, that, you know, half of our being is evil and wrong, and we got to get rid of it. But what I'm hearing you say here, it's unresolved. It needs to be resolved back into wholeness, and it can teach us a lot, can't it? I think some of our greatest lessons come when we look at our stupidities or our greed or our jealousy or whatever. They spur us on to understand life more deeply and more wonderfully so that we can, as you say, be more loving. Let me shift a little bit because we're running out of time and talk about some of the healing ceremonies and things. First of all, having watched some shamanic ceremonies, I got a question, and you can answer it, I'm sure. Is why do shamans it seem to spit on blow liquid on people? What's that about?
Well, they believe that when you spray someone with trago or with sugarcane rum, the molecules of the alcohol, which are very tiny, they are encompassing or they are eliminating the positive ions around the person's body. So we are, when you spray either water or tea or alcohol or wine, that it changes the electromagnetic field around the person's body, and it takes the tiredness, it takes the sickness that people feel when they have too much electricity around them, or positive electricity around them. I hope that this is more of a scientific explanation of that. But the idea is to refresh the energy field around the person's body.
Right. That's good. All right. And another thing that I noticed is the use of eggs. Tell us about that.
Well, the eggs are... the eggshell is very porous. They have about 70,000 little pores around the shell. And when you pass the egg over the person's body, the entire body, the energy, the negative, what we call negative energy, the energy that is stuck in the body that creates disease, is absorbed into the eggs and removed that energy. And it is a common practice, not only in South America, but it's also in Poland and in Europe and other places in the world that that use eggs. And the eggs, of course, have a symbolic, also a symbolism, spiritual experience, because from the egg is the form that life stopped. And anywhere, even in humans, the egg shape is the shape of our universe. If you look at the
cosmic egg,
it is the cosmic egg, and every cell in our body is an egg. Is it the same kind of shape? So you in the shamanic healing, you work with the physical, scientific, technical qualities of the elements, and there is a spiritual side to them too.
Right. I think people resonate to an egg shape, actually, that a lot of art, recapitulates it too. And I think people are fascinated. I know I am with bowls, and bowls have that same sense, the planes in the bowls are kind of resonate with that same energy. So there's, It's again, and I love also bowls, because bowls, like eggs, can be empty in a sense. Their emptiness is part of their fullness. They contain things, but they're not meant to. They're not meant to hold it. It's meant to be given, right? so there's that sense as well that an egg becomes truly useful when it cracks open and gives itself as spirit gives itself to us, in the universe at all times. So it's sort of full and empty at the same time, which is a beautiful idea. And I think it's true for us, when we give ourselves away, we are filled again. That's the miracle, isn't it, of
absolutely
healing. Yeah.
And for the people who are listening, if you have a headache or if you have any kind of physical pain, take an egg. Most likely you want to take a brown egg, because the shell is stronger. And rub it over your body, and you could see how the egg changes its constitution, and it becomes very heavy if you have a headache or pain. And then sometimes this egg will explode when if the energy is too strong. And so do that, and you see it. I in my teachings, a lot of people are taking eggs and just trying that on if they have migraines or headaches and pain, and they can see that it really works. And you can do that on your children. It's safe. Nothing will happen.
Yes, very good. That's a good practical tip that we can all use. Another image that I like is the spear or the sword. You know, in all traditions, you see this in Hinduism and Buddhism. You know, there's the sword of Manjushri, the bodhisattva of mm-hmm. of wisdom that cuts through the wand of the magicians is a similar thing. It's this. It's the rod or the sword of power, you know, and I think there's a similar thing in shamanism, isn't there?
Yes, of course. The sword is used to cut invisible cord that attach you to your enemies or to people who are you are dependent on, the people who are influencing you from evil spirit, from curses, from all of that. So In many different cultures, they are using different spears or different swords. And it's a common belief that when somebody is attached to you emotionally and physically, there is like poison arrow that are sent to you. You want to cut that as quickly as possible so you would not be manipulated, you would not that you could be free of that, and so you live your life. And that happens a lot with people who are connected to their mothers, to their fathers, to partners, to other things like that, that they are self-sabotaging happens. And you can do that with a ceremony. You can do it yourself. You can journey. You can imagine those places in your body where hooks, the poison hooks are hooked into you, and release them, cut them, and that's called cord cutting ceremony.
Yes, yeah, fascinating. All right, you told us some practical advice with eggs, but in the last couple of minutes, give us another piece of advice. If you could offer one thing that would be of help to people right now, what would it be?
I believe that we really need to believe or to practice a community living, a way for us to feel belonged to a church, a synagogue, to a circle, to our families, that our life is not just about ourselves. I truly believe that a lot of the disease that we are experiencing are the results of separateness, of that mythology that we have, that Americans go into the no man's land and conquer them and do it all by itself and nobody asks for help. We are interdependent on each other, like the same as plants in the Amazon or anywhere. We really have to allow ourselves to rely on other people and to support other people too. So if you ask me what I think, if people can find community and community can support you to help you, then a lot of the diseases and that sicknesses that you have probably will disappear. And then to own the fact that we are all healers, that we are all shamans, that right. each of us dream, each of us has visions, each of us know how to hug and whisper good words in the ears of our loved ones. And that by itself is calming, and we know the connection between the heart and our physical manifestation of disease. So we need that emotional connection to calm people, to distress them, to give them a sense of confidence in themselves. That's yes. what we have to do, and that's really our job. Our job is to be the shamans that we are born to be.
Yeah, beautifully put. Thank you. And we see that outpouring of help and compassion, don't we? Every time there's an atrocity, like in Las Vegas, you know, there's always people who are selflessly going forth, whether they're professionals, you know, the first responders, or whether they're people caught in the situation. There's always that outpouring of compassion, because deep down we know that that's higher and greater than any outrage, and that's the hope for all of us. I think that we have that capacity, and that's the way to overcome the seeming craziness. You know, that the vast majority of us and the greater part of ourselves, you know, follows that the better angels of our nature, and that's encouraging. Folks, we're at the end of the show. Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Itzhak. Next week, Jason Gregory returns to the show. He's been on before. Interesting man. He's going to discuss his new book. It's called Fasting the Mind. Get hold of that one. Fasting the Mind, Exercises for Psychic Detox. Kind of nice feedback on what we've been talking about today. So Fasting the Mind, Exercises for Psychic Detox. Right now, though, I want to give a hearty thank you to Itzhak Beery for being, again, a wonderful guest on my show. Fascinating stuff. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much. And you're always welcome to visit my website, which is myname.com, or Facebook, or any other way I can help. That would be great. And thank you so much for inviting me over again. And I hope to speak to you soon again.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and check out the shamanportal.org if you'd like to find out more. Get a hold of this book, too. Wonderful stuff, Shamanic Healing, Traditional Medicine for the Modern World. Take care now, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Have you ever stopped to think that before you can love anyone else or expect anyone to love you, you must first love yourself? If you're in the habit of putting yourself down, you may make it difficult for others to accept you. Why not choose instead to see yourself and others as God sees you? True self-esteem belongs to the one who looks in the mirror, not to criticize or admire, but to see past physical appearance into the essential child of God reflected there. The one who moves past fear and discomfort to look deeply and lovingly into his or her own eyes should be able to share that look of love fully with another. Accept the person you are. Risk sharing yourself with others, and then watch how you grow. This law of life is brought to you by Unity. To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Are you ready to experience the rich interconnection of spirituality, orientation, and identity? If so, plan to attend Liberating Your Divine Identity, a retreat at Unity Village during Pride Month, June 9th to the 12th. This soul-filled retreat is facilitated by LGBTQIA+ Unity Ministers, with workshops and ceremonies to cultivate a deeper awareness of our spiritual nature. Register at unityvillage.org/IAmDivine2022.